Welcome to the June 2025 News Bulletin podcast for Yacht and Small Craft Marine Surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, it may have passed you by, but there seems to have been a string of eye-catching large yacht fires erupting since the start of 2025 with devastating consequences. So, what is behind this surge in large yacht fires and is it acceptable? Of course not, and it is not yet entirely clear, are the simple answers. Whilst the reason of a boat fire is not always known instantly, lithium-ion batteries are said to have been the cause of one devastating fire in Marseille in January, which kick-started this unwelcome run of boat fires. The fire in question destroyed Nashka 4 and spread to two nearby yachts. The second yacht was also a total loss, while the third sustained severe damage to her portside. Oil booms were deployed to mitigate the environmental harm. Who knows what the final cost to insurers will be, once the dust settles. But this incident started an alarming trend. Also in January, a 29-meter Princess yacht was destroyed in a blazing inferno. The vessel was allegedly chartered by the renowned hip-hop producer Metro Boomin, unknown to me I must confess, who was not on board at the time. The Miami-Dade Fire Department mobilized more than 30 units, including ground crews and rescue boats, to contain the growing fire. However, the yacht eventually took on too much water and capsized into the river. Two further major fires occurred during March. The 29.63-meter Azimut motor yacht Ramonda was destroyed in the Portanovi Resort Marina in Montenegro. The images are horrific and very little remains of the vessel, just a charred and burnt-out hulk from what I can see. The local police force managed crowd control and supported the operation, whilst firefighter units worked to extinguish the fire. However, according to reports, the fire could not be contained on site. That same month, three yachts were destroyed following a marina fire in northwest Miami-Dade County, Florida, on the Miami River. According to local reports, authorities arrived at the scene to discover all three yachts ablaze. Firefighting efforts ensued from both shore and sea, with the fire extinguished 3 hours later by using foam techniques. Two of the affected vessels were below 24 meters. With the other confirmed to be the 30.8-meter Rodman yacht Nirvana. And then in April, a massive fire erupted on a yacht in Fethiye's Karagözler Marina in Turkey. Firefighting teams from Fethiye and Seydikme initially responded but were unable to contain the flames. Arriving swiftly at the marina, emergency crews worked intensively to control the fire, but it seems they could not prevent it from spreading to other nearby boats. Actual facts about the incident are sketchy. Eyewitnesses stated that one of the burning yachts had recently been launched and was a relatively new vessel. There have been other serious yacht fires too in recent months. So, what are we to make of this situation, which seems to be setting a rather worrying trend? The intensity and severity of these fires is also of concern. It is remarkable that to the best of my knowledge there were no deaths or injuries reported. I am keen to hear comment from insurers who, frankly, must be tearing their hair out. Once again, these cases highlight the continuing spate of fires affecting the yachting industry with seemingly no let-up. While it could certainly be argued that these fires are perhaps disproportionately reported due to social media, the rate of total losses caused by such incidents is actually increasing. Until the industry identifies and addresses the root causes of yacht fires, it seems inevitable that such incidents will probably persist and only grow in volume and severity. Enclosed space deaths remain a concern. You may be aware that the subject of enclosed space deaths is something that I became passionate about when I started my career with IIMS more than a decade ago. My interest in this topic remains undiminished, not least as it is still a major problem more than 10 years on and claiming lives. Little has changed, it appears. I have said it before and will repeat it again: no one should leave home and not come back alive that evening because they perished in an enclosed space. So, it was with genuine interest that I read an article recently about the fourth enclosed space entry, Joint Industry Workshop. A working group drawn from maritime organizations gathered earlier this year to identify measures to reduce or eliminate deaths in enclosed spaces on board vessels. I would encourage you to read the short article and to keep abreast of this important subject, which could unwittingly affect any surveyor. Read the article online, called Industry Majors Discuss Enclosed Space Entry Safety, which you can find at Safety 4C. Part of my job, which I really enjoy, is meeting marine surveyors wherever in the world they may operate. Whilst there are different maritime regulations in place across the globe, Most surveyors I have met are faced with the same challenges and issues and have a shared and burning desire to keep those at sea, plus the valuable assets and cargoes safe. Over the past few weeks, I have met surveyors in Baltimore, Ireland, Cornwall, UK, and most recently in Palma. Being able to network and share knowledge is invaluable. I am pleased to announce dates for my planned trip to New Zealand and Australia in July. For now, please save the dates. More details about the event schedules can be found in this news bulletin. But for now, I can confirm I am hosting an event on Friday afternoon 11th of July 2025 in Auckland and a two-day event in Brisbane the following week on 17th, 18th of July 2025. All are welcome to attend and both events will be open to in-person and online delegates. I am keen to showcase the work of IAMS and to introduce you to a range of knowledgeable and experienced speakers. Watch this space. Just before I close, you may recall that in my April News Bulletin introduction I gave you my forthright opinion on the shocking recent safety record of the Egyptian dive boat Liverboard Sector resulting in multiple boats sinkings and deaths. The thoughts and concerns I expressed brought my biggest post bag ever. I am grateful to those who have commented on this unacceptable situation. I have chosen to publish a response from Miku Bati, with his permission. He has had some direct involvement in this sector and his message published in this news bulletin is essential reading. Survey well, Mike Schwartz. We have an important notice for our first segment. Our IAMS annual general meeting is taking place on the 3rd of June at 2 p.m, London, UK time. It is being broadcast live via Zoom from the IAMS, HQ offices, and all are welcome to join. For more information, visit www.iaams.org.uk/events. We're also have an event in Australia this summer. It is some years since IAMS hosted a live event in Australia. IAMS CEO, Mike Schwartz, is hosting the two-day event in person on the 17th and 18th of July at the Novotel Brisbane Airport Hotel. Members and non-members are invited to attend. If you are unable to make the seminar in person, there is an option for distant delegates to join the event online via Zoom. And the third option is to purchase the video content, which will be available to all delegates, to be released after the event. You can find out more at www.iaams.org.uk/events. Alternatively, please contact Vicky Loisides at IAMSHQ by email at education@iaams.org.uk. Our next segment on this year's SeaWork event. Once again, it is almost time for the three-day, popular annual SeaWork show taking place at Southampton, UK from the 10th to the 12th of June. IAMS has had a stand at this event for many years, and the team enjoys being present at the event, meeting members as well as others from the workboat industry. You can find the IAMS booth as part of the much larger Workboat Association's bigger stand. If you are at the show, you are most welcome to come and say hello. For our next report, writing in response to Mike Schwartz's April News Bulletin introduction about the safety record of the Egyptian dive boat Liverboard Sector, Australian-based marine surveyor, Miku Bati, has submitted the following for publication. Last year, Maritime Survey Australia, International, Marine Surveyor, Miku Bati, conducted safety inspections on dive boats in the Red Sea, uncovering alarming deficiencies. He spoke with Joe Inwood of the BBC News about the state of the Egyptian dive liveaboard vessels and how we have developed an innovative star rating system to encourage a positive safety culture. Our findings underscore the urgent need for improved safety standards in the dive boat industry. Let's work together to create safer seas. You can listen to an online podcast that Mick completed with the Scuba Goat this subject at scubagoat.com. Mick writes, Maritime Survey International was engaged by our client to complete the inspection of liveaboard vessels in Egypt in January 2023 and January 2024. These inspections were to ensure that the vessels were safe and fit for purpose for a charter of up to 3 months. In total we inspected 14 vessels, a few of them did not warrant more than 5 to 10 minutes of my time and were clearly not fit for purpose. The survey inspection was to gather facts to provide a professional opinion of the vessel's safety, structure, systems, cosmetics, levels of compliance with currently applicable mandatory and voluntary standards, and best or common practice. These surveys are intended to give potential charter companies and guests, divers, enough information to make an informed decision. The findings on all the vessels were very similar. All of the vessel presented interiors, cabins and sleeping berths that are in good to very good condition, as this is the selling point for the charter operator. Many of the deficiencies are not expensive to repair or replace, and in most cases, compliance with safety and contemporary standards is simply unknown to the crew and operators as they are not educated in this space. Following these inspections, we contacted the Egyptian Authority for Maritime Safety at its main office in Alexandria as the concerned authority regarding the technical standards, compliance and registration. EAMS never responded to our emails. Excursion vessels with capacity of more than 10 tons that go beyond the regional waters must be registered. EAMS issues their registration certificates and revalidates their seaworthiness certificates, and gives the navigational permissions required. These regulations appear to be poorly enforced. Passengers have a reasonable expectation that a vessel that plies for hire and reward is fit for purpose. It is of no surprise that vessels that are not obligated or enforced to meet minimum safety standards do not. The Egyptian maritime authorities, for whatever reason, do not enforce their own obligations such as the collision regulations, and therefore, the domestic commercial vessel industry in Egypt plies its trade largely unregulated. A bachelor thesis investigation of a series of accidents involving yachts for diving vacations has been completed by Institute für Schiffbau und Maritime Technik Justus Schisler. In collaboration with Justus and the team at Taucher, who are passionate about diving, we decided to put together a checklist using the Caribbean SCV Code 2021 and presented this to around 40 dive operators. Our team then developed the MSI safety score that has been applied to the vessels following our inspection, and we have listed the vessels that have had a score of 3 or more here. The BBC also interviewed us and reported on this in an article in relation to the sea story. We are happy to promote the safe operators and hopefully have more vessel operators sign up to our safety audits, not just in Egypt but globally. For more info, visit maritimesurveyaustralia.com.au. Up next, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has published its first Safety Digest of the year. Safety Digest 1-2025 draws the attention of the marine community to some of the lessons arising from investigations into recent accidents and incidents. This information is published to inform the merchant and fishing industries, the recreational craft community and the public of the general circumstances of marine accidents, and to draw out the lessons to be learned. The sole purpose of the Safety Digest is to prevent similar accidents happening again. In his introduction, Chief Inspector of Marine Accidents, Andrew Moll OBE, highlighted to the recent collision between container vessels Solong and tanker Stena Immaculate, pointing out it appeared to be yet another collision that should not have happened. He added that a good lookout is key to preventing collisions, COL Regs Rule 5, and also that standalone vessels should ready to take avoiding action when necessary, Rule 17. The digest also featured introductions by Gary Doyle, Group Harbour Master of Peel Ports Group, Anne Hornigold, Director of Whitby and District Fishing Industry Training School, and Mark Bleeker, Director of MB Marine, who contributed their expert insights to this safety digest. You can read the report at iams.org/news. For our next story, the multi-billion dollar boating industry in Sydney is gearing up for an exciting 2025 with the announcement of two distinct boat shows, both presented in a new format by the Boating Industry Association, in partnership with its event delivery partner Mulfa Events. The first event, the Sydney Boat Show, will take place from August 14 to 17 at the Sydney Showground, Sydney Olympic Park. This show will showcase a comprehensive range of boat accessories and gear. Attendees can look forward to engaging activations, including a giant indoor pool that will serve as a central feature for a variety of demonstrations and activations, from tri-boating experiences to crucial safety demonstrations. Following this, the Sydney International On-Water Boat Show will be held at Cockle Bay, Darling Harbour, from November 13 to 16. This event will provide a dedicated on-water platform to showcase a wide array of vessels ranging from alternative fuel-powered sports boats to luxury motor cruisers. For our next story, the Institute is grateful to member Nick Healy for arranging an evening event for yacht and small craft surveyors based in the UK Southwest recently. Nick writes, "There were 9 attendees at Falmouth Boat Construction, who kindly hosted the event under the working title Marine Engineering. Jonathan, the chief and yard owner, headed up the talk, firstly giving us an insight into their services. He was followed by Steve, head engineer, who gave and showed some great examples of engine scenarios including installations, exhausts, corrosion in coolant systems, propellers and fuel management. He also took us through his extensive collection of photographs that he has meticulously collected over an engineering career spanning many decades. In addition, we walked through the yard looking at propellers and shafts where problems had been observed by Steve to understand the issues. I think I can speak for all present that this was a most useful exercise. I'm sure everyone would have learnt something and probably, most importantly, it gives a little reminder of the detail needed in order to provide a meaningful survey report. Surveying can be a lonely world sometimes. Time spent networking and building a relationship between other surveyors, brokers, and contractors has been invaluable during my career. Sometimes a quick call to a contractor or a fellow surveyor to discuss a topic on something you are currently looking at can make your day run a lot smoother. Asking for help when knowledge or experience may be at a deficient should be actively encouraged. Next, a shortage of surveyors is hampering South African marine manufacturing, a senior government maritime official told delegates at a maritime careers conference in Cape Town, Maritime Review Africa reports. The surveyor shortage is symptomatic of a broader skills shortage affecting the sector despite ongoing efforts to ramp up local skills training programs. Captain Vernon Keller, Deputy Chief Operations Officer of the South African Maritime Safety Authority, said the surveyor shortage was negatively impacting the maritime sector. SAMHSA was short at least 14 surveyors, Keller said. The surveyors are needed to conduct inspections required to keep abreast of international certification requirements. South African boat builders have also repeatedly raised concerns about a shortage of skilled artisans, with industry growth far exceeding the pool of available talent. The South African Boat Builders Export Council is actively working to alleviate the problem. In our next report, over half of vessels operating in Scotland's coastal waters are effectively invisible to standard maritime tracking systems, according to a new Heriot Watt study. The researchers have found that only 43% of vessels within 10 kilometres of the Scottish coast broadcast an automatic identification system signal, the standard global tool to monitor ship movements. The Heriot Watt team says this lack of visibility poses significant risks to marine life, safety, and sustainable ocean management. The study, which was published in the academic journal Marine Policy, relied on over 1,800 hours of land and sea surveys conducted between 2019 and 2024, covered 9 of Scotland's 11 marine regions and showed huge regional and seasonal disparities in AIS visibility. Furthermore, much of the data was collected by citizen scientists from several organizations. Volunteers were trained to follow a standardized method to survey and quantify ships. Volunteers from the Whale and Dolphin Conservation Shorewatch in Shetland, the Hebridean Whale and Dolphin Trust, and the community of Arran Seabed Trust all participated. Up next, the investigation into the deaths of British tech tycoon Mike Lynch, banker Jonathan Bloomer, and members of their families who perished when the luxury yacht Bayesian sank last year will take many months, a British inquest was told. The ship, owned by the Lynch family, is still on the seabed, but British investigators said they expected it to be raised and brought to shore imminently. The sinking is being investigated by Britain's Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, which examines whether there is criminal culpability, and the Marine Accident Investigation Branch, an inquest hearing at Suffolk Coroner's Court, was told. Senior Coroner Nigel Parsley asked Mark Cam, senior investigator at the MCA, if it would be fair to say that because the MCA was a long way from finalising its criminal inquiries, the inquest process was also unlikely to complete for many months. Mr. Cam said, "I would believe that would be the case, sir, yes." In our next report, the New Zealand Transport Accident Investigation Commission, after 5 people died when a boat capsized off the coast of Goose Bay on the 10th of September 2022. The Eyecatcher was an 8-metre aluminium pontoon boat operated by Fish Kaikoura 2011 Limited out of South Bay in Kaikoura, New Zealand. The vessel was primarily engaged for charter fishing, with occasional sightseeing tours around the coastal waters of Kaikoura. At approximately 0800 on Saturday 10th of September 2022, the Eyecatcher departed South Bay, Kaikoura with 11 people on board, comprising 10 passengers and the skipper. The passengers were members of the Nature Photography Society of New Zealand and had chartered the vessel for a 3-hour passage to photograph pelagic birds. At approximately 10:05, the Eyecatcher was off the coast of Goose Bay heading towards Riley's Lookout on its return to South Bay, when the vessel's occupants felt a sudden impact from underneath the hull and the Eyecatcher rapidly capsized to starboard. 5 passengers and the skipper managed to climb on top of the upturned hull, while the other 5 passengers remained in an air pocket underneath the vessel. The skipper placed an emergency 111 call using a passenger's mobile device, alerting New Zealand police to the accident and initiating a search and rescue operation. 6 of the 11 people survived the accident. The survivors were retrieved from on top of the upturned hull by responding vessels. The Police National Dive Squad later recovered the bodies of the remaining five passengers from underneath the upturned hull. The deceased were found wearing inflated life jackets within an air pocket that was heavily contaminated with petrol. Why it happened? It is virtually certain the eye catcher struck a whale that had surfaced underneath the hull, causing the rapid capsize to starboard. All five deceased passengers were found within the air pocket under the upturned hull wearing inflated life jackets, hindering their ability to escape. Four of the life jackets were manually activated, while one was automatically activated. It is virtually certain that defects in the vessel's fuel system allowed fuel to leak into the air pocket of the upturned vessel, reducing the survivability of the accident. What we can learn: because of the suddenness of the capsize, the vessel occupants were unable to retrieve the EPIRB to alert authorities to their emergency. The EPIRB remained secured in its bracket underneath the upturned hull. There is a significant safety benefit for vessels equipped with EPIRBs that are manually released and activated to carry a reliable secondary form of communication suitable for the location and conditions, such as a personal locator beacon. This practice greatly improves the likelihood of alerting authorities to an emergency should a sudden event occur. It is important for vessel owners and operators to be familiar with the state of fuel systems on board their vessels through regular inspections for deficiencies, ensuring the safety of the vessel and its occupants. Life jackets are a critical life-saving appliance. On the day of the accident, the vessel occupants were well equipped, wearing inflatable life jackets suitable for the vessel's operation. The circumstances of this accident highlights the importance for people to understand how to safely deflate and remove an inflatable life jacket while in the water should they need to do so in an emergency. Pre-departure safety briefings should include doffing procedures as part of life jacket operational instructions so that vessel occupants are well informed should a sudden emergency occur. Inflatable life jackets rely on the successful operation of an inflation mechanism to make them buoyant. It is important that inflatable life jackets are regularly inspected and maintained to ensure they work as designed when needed. You can read the full report at iamsnewzealand.co.nz. And for our final report, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has published a report into the double fatality and subsequent loss of a small commercial vessel in Anguilla in 2023. On the 11th of March 2023, the small commercial vessel Calypso 2 entered a cove near West End, Anguilla. The boat was overwhelmed by the force of the large ground seas that had developed near the coast, and the four passengers and two crew were ejected into the water. Tragically, the mate and a female passenger lost their lives. Safety issues. Calypso 2 was swamped because it entered an area of dangerous seas without being maneuvered away. The boat's operator did not have a safety management system that provided sufficient guidance and instruction to its skippers for the planning and execution of excursions. There were significant limitations in the framework for the conduct of small commercial vessel operations in Anguillan waters. While the search and rescue operation was effected promptly, there were omissions in the procedures and equipment available to the first responders. Recommendations. A recommendation has been made to the Anguilla Maritime Administration and Shipping Registry to work with the UK's Maritime and Coast Guard Agency to develop and implement a marine safety management system to ensure that operational risks are adequately assessed and managed. Also, to ensure that the installation of automatic identification systems and safety management requirements are verified during small commercial vessel inspections. Recommendations have also been made to Calypso Charters Limited to develop and implement a safety management system for its domestically operating commercial vessels, and to the Anguilla Fire and Rescue Service and the Royal Anguilla Police Force for the provision of additional equipment and the updating of triage procedures to improve their ability to respond to maritime emergencies. You can read the full report at iams.org.uk/news. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.